Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 2, text number 56. But we're not going to read the Sanskrit for 56, just 57. I'll just read the translation. Because of the loss of his wife, the Kalinga bird lamented with tears in his eyes. Meanwhile, following the dictations of mature time, the hunter was very carefully hidden in the distance, released his arrow, which pierced the body of the Kalinga bird, and killed him. Text 57. Evam yuyam apasyantya atmapayam abhudaya nainam prapyasyata sochantya. Patin Varsha Shinarapi. Evam, thus, Yuyam, you, Apashantya, not seeing, Atma Apayam, own death, Abhudaya, O ignorant ones, Na, not, enam, him, prapsyata, you will obtain, shochantya, lamenting for, patim, your husband, varshashitai, for 100 years, api, even. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Thus Yamaraj, in the guise of a small bird, boy, told the queens, "You are all so foolish that you lament but do not see your own death. Afflicted by a poor fund of knowledge, you do not know that even if you lament for your dead husband for hundreds of years, you will never get him back alive. And in the meantime, your lives will be finished." Purport. Yamaraj once asked Maharaj Yudhisthira, "What is the most wonderful thing within this world?" Maharaj Yudhisthira replied, "Ahanyahani bhutani gachantiha yamalayam shesha stavaram ichanti kem ashtrayam katakparam." Hundreds and thousands of living entities meet death at every moment, but a foolish living being nonetheless, thinks himself deathless and does not prepare for death. This is the most wonderful thing in this world. Everyone has to die because everyone is fully under the control of material nature. Yet everyone thinks that he is independent, that whoever he likes can do, whatever he likes he can do, that he will never meet death but live forever, and so on. So-called scientists are making various plans by which living entities in the future can live forever. But while they are thus pursuing such scientific knowledge, Yamaraj, in the due course of time, will take them away from their business of so-called research. Thus Yamaraj, in the guise of a small boy, told the queens, "You are also foolish that you lament but do not see your own death. Afflicted by a poor fund of knowledge, you do not know that even if you lament for your dead husband for hundreds of years, you'll never get him back alive. In the meantime, your lives will be finished." There's a saying in Bengal, not exactly saying, but there's an analogy. In Bengal, in order to provide for heating and for fuel, they take cow dung and make it into patties. In order to dry the patties, in order to use it for fuel and for heating. Then they stick it on their walls of their houses. And when it's dry, then they can use it for purpose. So one cow dung patty is now dry and is being thrown into the fire, and another cow dung patty, which is still wet, is laughing. Haha, just see what happens to you. You insulted me the other day, and now you've become dry, and now you're being thrown into the fire. The cow dung patty doesn't realize then very shortly he'll also become dry and thrown into the same fire. So similarly, people lament so unfortunate circumstances that it's rumored that even sometimes people die. Or now they have the coronavirus and people are afraid they might die. But of course, we all know everyone's going to die. As I said the other day, one devotee went to a doctor and the doctor took some tests about that he had some disease. And the doctor came back and said, I have some bad news for you. I think you're going to die. So then the devotee said, well, I have some bad news for you also. I think you're also going to die. That the death rate is more or less consistent in every country. It's approximately 100%. So to think that someone else has died or they're in some unfortunate position, such as death, Pashanapi na Pashati, they don't see that there's no solution to the death of the body. The only solution is trying to change the consciousness of the soul, trying to purify his mind and senses and intelligence so his consciousness can awaken again, so he can avoid taking another body. Evamana karma prasam pranyukte avidya mani upadiyamane pritirna yavan mai vyasideve namuchante deha yogena tadva. Evamana karma prasam pranyukte. So as long as one is absorbed in the material conceptions of life, especially with these upadis, evamana karma prasam pranyukte, that as long as one is in absorbed, let's see, how does it go over here? Evam manakaram prasam yukte avidyama upadiyamane. As long as one is covered by ignorance, as long as ignorance and actually believes that he has some material, that these material designations are his actual self, whatever it may be, to think that anything in relation to this body is my actual being. Now, as I said the other day, sometimes we take initiation and then we think my body is Krishna Das. Generally we think, now we sometimes even think we don't really need the Das. I'm kind of like Krishna now. And what to speak of Dasa, Dasa, Anudasa. In other words, even initiation is a kind of designation if it's not properly understood. One can actually identify oneself as being part of some sectarian group and misunderstand that an actual initiation is to get out of that material conception, not to get another material conception. At the time of initiation, one is supposed to consider oneself to be dasa, dasa, anudasa, without any ahankara, without any material designation, of which being initiated by a particular guru has its validity if the guru is actually teaching how to get free from material designations. Then if one becomes a servant to that guru, he connects with the whole disciple succession, and ultimately he connects with the super soul within his heart, and he knows, he learns how to treat every living entity as Krishna's eternal servant, without misidentifying oneself solely as a material designation. In other words, two things have to go on simultaneously, because as long as one is conditioned by material life, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, in two verses actually, which makes it quite significant, because Krishna speaks the whole Bhagavad Gita, well, the Bhagavad Gita is a summary of all the Vedic literature, which has more than a billion verses. Whatever Krishna speaks, because he's been doing it for a long time, he mentions that he previously had spoken to the sun god at least 120 million years ago. So he's had a lot of time to study what he was going to present in Bhagavad Gita. And there are only 700 verses, condensing 1 billion verses down. So everything he says must be quite significant. he doesn't waste words. Arjuna wasn't just kind of like relaxing with Krishna on the beach. And Krishna says, would you like to hear something interesting? And Arjuna says, yeah, yeah. Wake me up if I fall asleep. No, this was meant for Kali Yuga, specifically for our part of Kali Yuga, the 10,000 years, where people have some ability or opportunity to become Krishna conscious. And therefore Krishna wanted to make sure he got the 700 most essential verses into the Bhagavad Gita. And of those, he repeated only two twice, so they must have quite a bit of significance. Otherwise, why would he repeat them practically verbatim twice? So one of them is Shreyan Svadamo Viguna Paradharma Sunustita Shreyadharmen Nidinam Shreyat Paradharmo Bhayavakaha. Or in the other, it's Kilbisha, that one is never affected by sinful reactions. So here it says, Shreya. Shreya means we have Shreya and we have Prayas. So Shreya is long-term, and Prayas is short-term. But long-term benefit and short-term satisfaction. Shreya Swadumo Viguna. So, in the long-term, everyone has their duty. There may be duties according to one's psychophysical nature, in the modes of material nature, called varnashram, or there may be duties given by the spiritual master, or his representative, the representative authorities. So, shreyan svadamo viguna. So, viguna means not perfectly done. So, our advancement doesn't depend upon so-called perfectly doing our occupational duty. It depends more upon the fact that we commit ourselves to our duty in the first place, that we become a servant. Now, anyone who whimsically gives up their duty, Krishna says, can have neither peace nor happiness nor the supreme destination. Because one gives up his duty, as Krishna will say in the next verse, not out of inspiration, out of enlightenment. They give it up out of lust and anger and greed. Therefore, Shreya Swadhamo Viguna Paradharma Swanustitat. So, it's better to perform one's own duties, although they may be imperfectly performed, than to take up someone else's duty, although one may be able to do it better. First of all, you get sinful reactions for not doing your duty, and then you get more sinful reactions for denying someone else from doing their duty. So you lose both ways. Shreyan Swadamo Viguna Paradharma Swanusti Shreyadharma Nidhanam Shreya. It's better that you do your duty, although imperfectly, even if you get destroyed, because to follow someone else's duty is Shreyan Swadamo Viguna Paradharma Swanusti Shreyadharma Nidhanam Shreya. Paradharmo, because if you do someone else's duty, it's dangerous. So then, of course, as I said, Arjuna asked Krishna, why would anyone want to do that? What you're talking about doesn't make any sense. Why would someone else want to do someone else's duty? Why would one want to get up his own duty, as Arjuna was doing at the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita? But he was wondering, what is this thing that I want to give up my own duty also? Although I'm a warrior, and other people also do the same thing. What is causing it? So, Ata keno priyukto yam papam charati purusha anicham napi varshneya baladiva nyojita. What is this bala? What is this energy, this force that's causing one to do something that we know we shouldn't be doing, or not to do something we know we should be doing? So Krishna doesn't say, well, it was probably your mother's fault, you know, you just weren't treated nicely in childhood, and, you know, maybe you should just take a vacation and come back, we'll ask you again. And no, he says, Sri Bhagavan Vacha, Kama Esha, Krodha Esha, Rajaguna Samudvavaha, Mahashino Mahapatma, Vidinam Ihavarina. It is lust only, Arjuna, the all-devouring sinful enemy of the world, which is later transformed into wrath. actually, is lust only Arjuna, which is later transformed into wrath, which is the all-devouring sinful enemy of this world. So Krishna doesn't, you know, try to be diplomatic with Arjuna. He just tells him, you don't want to do your duty, it's because of lust. I'm asking you to do, I'm God, I'm Krishna, I'm asking you to do something, you don't want to do it. Scriptures tell you to do it, you're a Kshatriya, as I pointed out in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, if you were awake to hear it, etc., etc. And you don't still, you know, wondering why you don't want to do your duty. Well, it's lust only, Arjuna, and maybe anger. In other words, from there you get deluded, and you forget even what your duty is, and you lose your intelligence, and you do what you're not supposed to be doing. These duties were given to you so you can avoid lust, anger, and greed. They're not given to you so you can perfect the material world. Even Brahma can't perfect the material world. The same problems of old age, disease, and death that everyone's trying to avoid, it doesn't matter what you do, they're still going to be there. You become the most expert in anything in this material world, you're not going to solve any problem, any real problem. But you can solve your own problem if you do your duty, what you're supposed to be doing. Then at least you can solve your problem. Even if you can't, it's not possible to solve anyone else's problem. Therefore, one has to understand what is to be done, what's not to be done, as Krishna says, through the authority, of which the authority has to be based on Shastra. And knowing such rules and regulations, one should act so one can gradually become purified. Therefore, initiation means to give up material designations, upadis, and to try to develop love for Vasudeva. Because as long as one has any upadis, as long as one is working in the material platform of consciousness, evam pritirna yavan maya Vasudeva, one will not develop love for Vasudeva. If one is seeing someone as a man or a woman, if one is seeing this group or that group, then one is not remembering Krishna. Of course, as I said, externally, we have to work according to varna ashram to a certain extent, because there, as long as we're conditioned, there are men and women. Sukadeva Goswami, he was liberated from his very birth, and he walked out of the womb of his mother at 16 years old, which was quite a relief for his mother, let me tell you. Oh my God, can't imagine. And he walked naked, and he passed by some damsels, and they just ignored him. They're naked damsels who are bathing in a river. In India, the ladies, at least previously, they have some spot, and no men would go there. And they were free to swim naked. I don't think they had bikinis back then or bathing suits. Or either you went in your sari, and then you had to spend the whole day hoping your sari dries, or somehow or another you found the spot where you could go naked and you didn't have to worry about getting your sari wet. So they were bathing there naked, and Sukadeva Goswami walked by, and they didn't even notice him. But running after him was Vyasadeva. And as soon as the ladies saw Vyasadeva, immediately they covered their bodies. So Vyasadeva was quite surprised. My son came by here just a short period of time. You just ignored him. But as soon as you saw me, then immediately covered your bodies. So I'm on the same level of spiritual realization that my son is on. Matter of fact, I'm his spiritual master. So why the differentiation? They said, because your son's a liberated soul, and we can understand by his demeanor that he was innocent. He didn't see the difference between men and women. He saw souls, principally. Just like when one is looking at a body, one is not usually identifying the person with the colored dress or the pants that they have on. One is identifying themselves with the person who's wearing the dress. So he's identifying himself with us, the soul, and therefore he didn't really care about what kind of dress we have on. Or, in our case, lack of dress. But you're yourself, you're playing the role of a householder. Unless you can discriminate between man and woman, because this is 5,000 years ago, so there's a different understanding of what a householder was. Then you can't really play the role of a householder. You have to discriminate. So therefore, to properly reciprocate with you, we have to cover our bodies. Because for you, we're supposed to be women. Otherwise, you're just pretending to be a householder. So we have to actually, we're not on the Shukadeva Goswami's platform, and even if we were, Rupa Goswami has advised us that externally we should behave as a neophyte. Although we may be a liberated soul within, remembering Krishna's pastime. So a certain amount, we accept a certain amount of Vanashram Dharma injunctions, and we discriminate between men and women, because practically speaking, Varnashram, in my understanding, only has two, you can summarize it in two ways. One of them is, which has its basis in Bhagavad Gita, that Varna is principally just to get some rain so we can get some grain and eat. That's the summary. Sacrifice for Vishnu, and if we sacrifice for Vishnu, then the rain comes and we can eat. And the other thing is ashram. Avoid illicit sex. Avoid any kind of sex. So eventually you can, well, gradually develop spiritual consciousness and give up material consciousness, with sex as the principal allurement, so you can become liberated. You can realize you're Brahman. And then you can take up the process of devotional service. So one is freedom from sense gratification, ashram, and the other is occupation, so we can get some sense gratification and survive long enough to become self-realized. So we have to do both. We have to see that our occupational duty will actually provide our necessities of life, and at the same time we're becoming liberated from the material concepts by proper organization, proper association. Therefore, our society principally is meant for liberation. In other words, our activities are supposed to be performed on the liberated platform, liberated from all kind of material designations, and only considering oneself to be the servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna. Therefore, we take initiation from the elevated spiritual master to teach us that, how to identify ourselves as the servant of the servant of all of Krishna's servants, and how to live in the association of devotees and discriminate between who's on what level of devotional attainment so we can properly serve them. As soon as one takes initiation, one vows to serve all the devotees and indeed all living entities appropriately. But at least the realm of service is mainly within the association of devotees, especially in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement to cooperate in the spreading of Krishna consciousness and the development of Krishna consciousness. So therefore one has to discriminate transcendentally and then serve with expertise the different classes of devotees, the innocent and the non-devotees, all for the pleasure of Krishna, all to glorify Krishna. And if we don't do that, if we simply establish another material designation, then we remain on the Prakriti Bhaktas, materialistic devotees who are principally relying upon more and more the deities in the temple as our salvation or as our provider for our material necessities. And therefore, those who are most attracted to worship deities, for instance, and get some material remuneration, certain communities like the Indian community, they become our support, our principal focus of convincing them to become members or in some way of our society and give donations, etc., etc. And other people are not seen as so valuable because they're not so much attracted to the deity worship. In any case, our society has to have a balance of deity worship and also outreach. But that outreach can only be effective factually, even within the Indian community or any community, when we give up our material designations and feel ourselves to be part of a spiritual family, not a little spiritual family, because anyone who feels themselves to be part of a small group then he has material designations, and those designations will keep one within the material conception of life. And anyone in the material concept of life will eventually be lured by lust and greed and anger, and remain in a delusional state. So one has to work in order to get free from these designations and establish ISKCON as one big spiritual family with one spiritual mission, with a variety of ways of approaching that spiritual mission, to convince everyone that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and with our unique contributions we can serve him if organized appropriately so that we have unity and diversity. Then people will come attracted to join our movement because from the material point of view, we don't have much to offer them right now. Maybe in the future we might, since the economic downturn. But as far as, you know, buildings or whatever else, we may believe we have a great philosophy, we have the answer to everything, but people won't be so much impressed by that if we don't live according to it. We talk about spiritual family, but there are other groups who are much more interested in their own little ways, creating their family, their spiritual family, that they have more unitedness within their particular church or synagogue or temple, whatever it may be, or mosque, because they only allow people in who believe the way that they believe. But we have in our group, we have people who believe completely diametrically, trying to so-called cooperate with each other. It makes it extremely difficult to actually get one. In other words, you go up to any member of our society, any temple, and you ask, what's the purpose of your temple? And you get, either you get, I have no idea what we're doing here, what our purpose is. Or you may get many different answers. As a matter of fact, you may get different answers from the same devotee on different days. So unless we all have the same purpose and we're all rowing the same way, then we may not get to our designation. If everyone is rowing the same way, then people won't be rocking the boat, trying to shake the boat so it sinks. So better to get everyone working in the same direction. And then actually we'll know that we're trying to become liberated from all material designations and serve in one big spiritual family for the interests of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to convince people that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, especially by a cultural revolution, attracting people by what people can appreciate, whether it be music or art or culture or drama or by philosophy also, whatever can attract people we utilize, all with the idea of convincing people that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and that we should all unite as one spiritual family for that mission of convincing people that. Then there can actually be a change in the world. When people know that Krishna is the controller, when they know that Krishna is the enjoyer, and that when they know that Krishna is the friend, whoever you call Krishna, Jehovah, Allah, whatever, we're not. But that God is the supreme enjoyer, God is the supreme controller, and God is the supreme friend, and he's all attractive. He's Bhagavan. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Yes.
Hare Krishna. Thank you, Maharaj. It is one of the most frequently asked questions. What is my nature? How to determine one's nature? Because you mentioned Krishna says this verse two times.
Yeah.
Shriyam Svadharma Viguna. So brings up the question of finding out one's nature. So how does one go about finding out?
Well, if you don't know what your nature is, either you're a Shudra or you're less than a Shudra. Pretty simple. Because Shudras are in ignorance. They don't know anything. So if you don't know your nature, you must be a Shudra. Or as Krishna says, Ukramantam siddhim vapi bunjana vagunam vita vimudo nani pashanti pashanti jnana chakshusha. The foolish, they can't understand how the living entity quits his body or what kind of body he enjoys under the spell of nature, modes of nature. But those whose eyes are trained with knowledge can see all this clearly. So if you don't know, you must be foolish, and that's the definition of a Shudra. And as Bhaktivinoda Thakura said, We were born Shudras, and generally by modern education we became less than animals. So we're on somewhere on that line between an animal and a Shudra. And when we understand what our nature is, we'll find out that, generally speaking, our nature is Krishna Das, and that our capacity to act according to the modes of nature is rather limited. In other words, we can't really declare ourselves clearly. We can only see its general tendency. Someone may like to preach, so then, or study, but it doesn't mean that they're a Brahmin just because they like to study and preach. It means that they're somewhere on that continuum, higher than simply lamenting or wanting freedom from distress or only looking for comfort through devotional service. They're somewhat inquisitive to find out something. But that doesn't mean that they've realized Brahman. They're actually Brahmins. But because they have that tendency, therefore they can be engaged as a Brahmin. Not only to help others understand the philosophy, but to help themselves too. By writing and learning to present and seeing studying. They can help themselves. So similarly in every field, we don't have a clear designation. Anyone who comes to Krishna consciousness, they must be inquisitive. So there must be some brahminical nature, but they may have another, they may be more overwhelmed by distress, or they may want comfort first before they can do their service. So we're a mixed group usually. But when we have a tendency to do something, we're inspired to do it, then it could be engaged in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. So it's not so important to give ourselves a designation because it wouldn't be very meaningful, it wouldn't be accurate. We're too mixed. One day we act like a Brahmin, the next day we're aspiring to become a Shudra or a Vaishya or whatever. But we have tendencies and therefore they can be utilized, whatever we're inspired for, dovetail. And then gradually we'll become purified and one day it'll become clearer what we're actually meant to do. Well, and we're meant to spread Krishna consciousness. Maybe in subsequent future generations they'll become clearer. If people become purified, then they'll have children who have a clearer designation where they should work. But right now it doesn't really matter so much. What matters is that we work for Krishna, to spread Krishna consciousness cooperatively. That's the most important thing. Is that right? Anything else? Yes.
Thank you, Maharaj. So, answering Adipurush Prabhu's question, in that relation, what does this verse from third chapter means? Better to do your own duty imperfectly than,
As I said, there are two kinds of swadharma, duties. One is the material swadharma, given by the spiritual master based on also Shastra and Krishna's instructions in Shastra, according to our psychophysical nature, as a Brahmin, as a Kshatriya, as Vaishya, Sudra, Brahmachari, Grihastha, etc. So there are duties designated. But there's another Swadharma given by the spiritual master coming down in our line of disciple succession. They're not necessarily different. It's not that my spiritual master tells me that I should come distribute books, so now I don't have to be a brahmachari or a grihastha. Bhaktivinoda Thakura said sometimes these duties, they run parallel and sometimes they conflict with each other. But in any case, if we can't follow strictly the varnashram, then we have what we have now. We have the duties coming in a disciple succession from our acharyas through the present their present representatives and based on Prabhupada's instructions. And then we have the duties of Varnashram, which we accept accordingly in order to properly organize the Sankirtan movement so it's more effective. But we don't accept Varnashram independently of, right now, especially for ourselves, of organizing the Sankirtan movement effectively. Because we're not on the level, we're not all Paramahansas that we can just automatically the super soul is directing us. So therefore we have to take into account our conditioned nature also, even in the Sankirtan movement. Yes?
You are many times mentioning Sankirtan, of course, as the basis and the only real purpose of our existence, of our institution.
Yes.
But today, apart from a few enthusiasts going out every here and what, I mean, in which direction, what should we do? How
What should we do? We should do what Prabhupada tells us to do. What's that? What should we do, he's asking. Well, we should do what Prabhupada tells us to do, which is not just, I mean, part of that is to go out and distribute books, whatever. Part of that is to have, bring people in, tell them about Krishna appropriately, inspire them to take up the process, get them to become members, committed members, and then engage them in service and send them out to get more people to do the same thing. So not everyone necessarily has to go out on book distribution or even Harinam, but everyone has to be engaged in increasing people's education and commitment to the process of Krishna consciousness in some way. Prabhupada didn't ask everyone to go out. He wanted teachers in the Gurukul. He wanted people to work on the farm. He wanted actors and actresses to perform plays. He wanted a variety of things, all with the purpose of convincing people that Krishna is God. But of course, if you don't have people going out and just having programs, there's no one to come and convince. Then the deity worship is, when people go out and bring people here, then the deity worship becomes more important. Then the actors and actresses become more important. Then the farms become, everything becomes more exalted. When there's a purpose, they all fit into the unity and diversity. All right, thank you very much. Grandharaj, Shrimad Bhagavatam, Ki Jai.